Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the July 8th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Arcola City Council approved pay raise for Public Works by Jacob Hamm. Public Works Director Dusty Ingram will be seeing a $1 per hour raise after passing the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency exam to become a sewer operator in training. Ingram is undergoing training by the Environmental Resource Training Center for Sewer Operations. Once his training is complete, it is likely that Ingram will assume the role of operator, according to Bill Wagoner, City Administrator for Arcola. The city currently contracts for that role. The council also approved $153,000 contract for the road seal coat maintenance to Earl Walker Company, which was the sole bidder. Also approved was a festival district permit for the Sip, Sweet, and Stroll event in July 23. The permit will allow open consumption of alcohol in the 100 block of North Locust, the intersection of Main and Locust, south to the 100 block of South Locust, and in the 100 and 200 blocks of West Main. The zoning report showed a signed permit for Sunny Patel's Stonegate Inn at 236 South Jock Street. The fee was $29. In his written report to the council, Wagoner said there have been inquiries from roofing companies interested in canvassing the city following recent hail, but no solicitation permits applications have been received. In the next article, Cohen Condell shares experience with Arthur Rotary after spending nearly a year in Brazil by Marty Yackel. Cole Condell, son of Mac and Ginny, grandson of Mary Beth Condell, and brother to Charlie and Kenzie, spent more than 10 months of the past year as Rotary exchange student in Brazil. Some of this information was shared in an interview, and some is from his presentation at the Arthur Rotary Club at their July 2nd meeting. When asked what inspired or motivated him to want to spend almost a year in another country, Cohen said that it was something he and his dad had discussed for a couple of years. Subsequently, Mac talked to the local Rotary Club, who put Cohen in touch with Tiffany Henry, who is in charge of the Rotary District 6490 Exchange Student Program. Cohen shared that he was interested in learning about a different culture and learning a new language, and that he very much wanted to visit the Amazon, which is why he put Brazil first on his list of countries of choice. Brazil also has and accepts many exchange students, so he felt his chances were good to go there. The country selection came about after he did an interview and got accepted to the program and did receive his first choice of Brazil. Cohen left for Brazil last August and met with his host family, which consisted of his dad, mom, little brother, while their daughter was an exchange student in Mexico. His second host family were friends of his first family members, of which were dad, mom, a brother his age, a little sister, and an older sister. Cohen returned to the United States in mid-June of this year. Plans are already in the works for one of the families to visit Arthur and the Condells at some point, and Cohen hopes to return to Brazil after high school. Portuguese is the language of Brazil, and Cohen did not know Portuguese when he became fairly fluent after only a few months. In fact, he began his presentation at the Rotary meeting by introducing himself in Portuguese. His dad says he sometimes slips into Portuguese when cheering on Brazil in the soccer field, and especially when talking to fellow exchange students on the phone. By the way, he's still roading to the United States while cheering for Brazil as well. The weather was somewhat warmer there than here, but when it did get colder, it was difficult because Brazilians don't have heat in their homes. On those days, he said he just wanted to stay in bed and stay warm. Other topics of conversation included school, food, and traveling. Cohen noted that the school is a lot different. It starts at 7:30 in the morning, but they were often done by 12:30, although sometimes there were classes in the afternoon, which were the less important ones. He was not very fond of the early start, but did like getting out early. Unlike here, the students stayed in the same room all day, and the teachers moved between classrooms. Every day was also a different schedule, in that one day they might study math, physics, and biology, and on the next day it might be sociology and geography. More varied classes were offered, including philosophy. The school he attended was a private school with 200 students from kindergarten through 12th grade, although the last 3 years of high school are referred to as the first and second years, not sophomore and junior and senior as they would be here. As for the food, which he liked a lot, he said meals usually included more variety with steak, pasta, rice, and beans as staples. Lunch was the big meal of the day and in the afternoon, and they would have coffee and cake. Dinner was often the same, but consisted of smaller portions. He did not care for the fact that dinner was often eaten very late at 9 p.m. or later. This made for a short night when school started as early as it did. One of the main reasons for spending this year abroad was the opportunity to travel, and Cohen very much enjoyed the fact that he got to do a lot of visiting many of the 26 states which comprise the country. He went on some sort of trip just about every month and took lots of trips with the fellow exchange students because there's a travel agency that arranges these for exchange students. He made friends with students from Mexico, Chile, Taiwan, Colombia, Germany, and Denmark, to name just a few. He also visited Paraguay and Argentina, as both of those countries share borders with Brazil. He went to the beach and the capital, Brasilia, with his host families. He and his friends went camping a lot as well. Other trips included exploring caverns and botanical gardens, an opera house, and the Pantanal, the largest wetland in the world. The trip to Rio de Janeiro was one of his favorites, next to the trip to the Amazon, which was, as mentioned, one of the main reasons for wanting to go to Brazil. In Rio, he got to see the famous Christ the Redeemer statue. At the Rotary meeting, Cohen shared slides and pictures from these trips of his host families and the friends he made during his year away from home. These pictures and slides showcased the beauty of the country. He also shared a humorous misconception about the United States, which he encountered somewhat often. When others learned he was from the U.S., they often asked if he was from Texas or thought he must live in Texas. When he told them no, he's from a small town a few hours from Chicago, they wanted to know if Chicago was in Texas. Cohen will be a junior at ALAH this fall and will graduate in 2028. When asked what he missed most, of course, he said his family, friends, and also mentioned the farm. He's looking forward to fishing and working at the patch this fall. Since he turned 16 last December, the thing he's most looking forward to after a couple of weeks driving with the ALAH driving instructor is getting his license soon. He plans to be involved in baseball, Scholastic Bowl, and FFA during his last 2 years at ALAH. When he asked if he had plans after high school, he shared that he might do something with wildlife biology and maybe agriculture. Rotary members shared that there will be an exchange student at ALAH this fall, a girl from Italy, so the tradition of having an exchange student at our high school will continue. Cohen ended his talk at Rotary by thanking members for their sponsorship and expressed that he could not have had this experience without their help and support. The next article, Horse Progress Days, draws crowds for 2 days of horse-powered farming and rural living, out of Arcola. Nearly 15,000 visitors from across the United States and several foreign countries gathered July 3rd through 4th at the Laverne Yoder Farm near Arcola for the 32nd annual Illinois Horse Progress Days, making this year's event one of the best attended in recent years. Organizers also noted a significant increase in the number of young families and children attending, a promising sign that interest in horse-powered farming and rural tradition continues to grow in the next generation. The two-day event transformed the working farm into one of the nation's largest showcase of draft horses, horse-drawn farm equipment, and educational seminars and homesteading demonstrations. In welcoming guests, General Coordinator Virgil Yoder thanked the Laverne Yoder family for opening their farm to host the event while encouraging visitors to respect the property and help preserve the venue for future generations. Throughout both days, the fields came alive, beginning at 9 a.m. with horse-powered field demonstrations featuring manure spreaders, followed by plowing and tillage equipment. Haying demonstrations during the afternoon highlighted how modern farmers continue to utilize draft horses in agricultural production. The main arena hosted activities throughout the day, including official welcomes, children's pony express rides, storytelling sessions, and international guest recognition. The increased number of children could be seen throughout the grounds as families gathered to watch demonstrations, interact with horses, and participate in activities designed to introduce youngsters to agriculture and rural living. Educational opportunities remained a cornerstone of Horse Progress Days. General seminars covered topics including farm succession planning, building healthy soil, raising rabbits, and therapeutic riding. Round pen demonstrations featured colt starting, horse shoeing, blacksmithing, confirmation evaluations, side pass, and speed control training. The homesteading area attracted steady crowds with presentations on multi-species grazing, sheep herding, chicken processing, milking demonstrations, pasture equipment, polyface farming, and discussions with local farmers. The homemaker area offered practical sessions on sourdough and fermented foods, cut flower bouquets, A2A2 milk, home butchering and specialty meats, healthy lifestyles, and choosing joy in motherhood. A highlight each evening was the popular breed presentation exhibition in the main arena, where approximately 20 breeds of horses were showcased. Visitors learned about everything from powerful Percherons, Belgians, and Clydesdales, to Halflingers, Frisians, Gypsy Vanners, Quarter Horses, Tennessee Walkers, and miniature horses. The Friday evening presentation began at 5 p.m., while Saturday's exhibition started at 4 p.m. More than educational demonstrations filled the grounds. Hundreds of exhibitors displayed horse-drawn equipment, agricultural products, livestock supplies, handcrafted goods, and rural lifestyle products, while food vendors and sponsors lined the show grounds. The event was made possible through the support of numerous businesses and organizations. Wilson Pallet and First Neighbor Bank served as Platinum Extreme sponsors, while dozens of additional companies supported the event at platinum, gold, and silver and bronze sponsorship levels. Individual horse breed presentations were also sponsored by businesses and organizations dedicated to preserving draft horse traditions. This year's show set all-time record for sponsorships, breaking the previous record held by Pennsylvania. Horse Progress Days continues to serve as one of the Midwest's premier events promoting horse-powered farming, offering visitors an opportunity to witness traditional agriculture in action while learning how draft horses remain an important part of sustainable farming practices today. It was announced the 2027 event will take place in Mount Hope, Ohio, July 1st and 2nd. With thousands in attendance and a noticeably larger number of children and young families filling the grounds, this year's Horse Progress Days demonstrated that while it celebrates the past, the future of horse-powered agriculture and rural heritage remains bright. Organizers closed the event by thanking the many volunteers, exhibitors, sponsors, and visitors whose support continues to preserve and promote the traditions, craftsmanship, and community spirits that define Horse Progress Days. We'll move now to the obituaries. Mary Alice Smith of Tuscola passed away peacefully on Sunday morning, May 31st, 2026, at the Odd Fellows Rebecca Home in Mattoon. She was 101 and a half years old. A service celebrating Mary's life will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, July 13th at Tuscola United Methodist Church, 901 North Prairie Street, Tuscola. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service at the church. In memory of flowers, memorials are suggested to the Tuscola Public Library. Don L. Becker, 69, of Sullivan, passed from this life to life eternal at 9:50 p.m. on Wednesday, July 1st, 2026, at Willow Breeze Hospice House in Mattoon. Mass of Christian burial was held Tuesday, July 7th at St. Comasile Catholic Church, Sullivan. Prayer service was Monday with visitation following at Reed Funeral Home, Sullivan. Rite of committal and burial was in Green Hill Cemetery, Sullivan. Memorials are suggested to the Sarah Bush Lincoln Home Care. David Lane, Dave Binion, 73, of Arthur, passed away at 10:55 a.m. on Sunday, June 28, 2026, at the Haven of Arcola. Graveside funeral services were held Thursday, July 2nd, in the Arthur Cemetery, Lamar, Miller officiated. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with the family. The next article, Pritzker signs bills on environmental standards, in-state tuition, climate risks, by Ben Selinke and Brendan Moore. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed more than 60 bills since Friday, including new laws to increase transparency around rental fees and give some drivers an alternative to having their license suspended. Rural transparency. House Bill 3564 bans so-called junk fees charged by landlords and adds new layers of transparency to rental agreements. The law, which takes effect January 1st, will prohibit landlords from levying fees or fines for a lease modification or renewal, an eviction notice, after-hours maintenance request, and routine maintenance, among other common scenarios. It will also cap application and background check fees at $50 unless the actual cost of a third-party background check exceeds that. The landlord will have to pay upfront and bill the applicant with a receipt displaying the third-party vendor costs within 14 days. Landlord must also include a list of all non-optional fees on the first page of the lease. Tenants aren't obliged to pay any fee that's not included. Those in violation of the law are subject to civil liability. The Blue Envelope Program. House Bill 4472 requires the Secretary of State to establish a statewide Blue Envelope Program. The voluntary program allows people on the autism spectrum to show a blue envelope to police officers that signals to the officer a person has communication disorder. The envelope can house documents that include instructions for both the officer and the individual about how to handle the interaction. Many police departments around the country and throughout the state already participate in the program. The law takes effect January 1st. Coupons. House Bill 45 requires retailers to make digital coupons available to other customers through non-digital means. Coupons do not have to be provided in paper, but retailers must ensure the benefits are available to any qualifying customer. Lawmakers said they filed the bill after hearing concerns from customers about not being able to access digital savings. The law takes effect on January 1st. Rate hike forums. House Bill 4514 gives public utility customers the right to request a public forum to discuss rate hike proposals in front of the Illinois Commerce Commission, as well as the right to submit written feedback. It takes effect January 1st. Until now, customer testimony hasn't been part of a protected part of the process, with speaking times limited to 3 minutes at ICC hearings and customers given no opportunity to submit written statements as part of the formal record. The new law also requires scheduling the forum on days and times to allow the greatest participation. Public media protections. House Bill 4420 enshrines the editorial independence of public radio and television stations affiliated with the Illinois Colleges and University. The new law shields editors and reporters from prior preview by university officials. It's essentially an extension of the protections already provided to student journalists. According to the Illinois Public Broadcast Council, 8 colleges and universities operate radio and television stations now covered by the law, which the organization says is the first of its kind in the nation. Diaper labeling. House Bill 4702 will require manufacturers of disposable and reusable diapers to include a list of all ingredients in order of predominance on the product packaging. The updated packaging will be required no later than July 20th, 2028. The goal, proponents say, is to allow families to identify potential allergens. With clear indication, labeling, families will make better equipped to avoid products that may contain substances they prefer not to use and make informed decisions with confidence, says Senator Laura Fine, Democrat of Glenview. Speed control devices. Illinois drivers who have their license suspended for speeding or reckless driving violations have an alternative under House Bill 4948. Drivers have their license suspended for two infractions within a 12-month period for driving 25 miles per hour or more over the speed limit would be allowed to have a speed control device installed in their car rather than having their license suspended. The device is programmed to know the road speed limit and prevents the vehicle from driving any faster than it, no matter how hard the driver presses the gas pedal. It's similar to ignition interlock devices that people convicted of drunk driving must blow in to start their car. This law creates a pathway for high-risk drivers to remain connected to their communities while helping ensure our roads are safe for everyone, bill sponsor Representative Marty Duder, Democrat of Elmhurst, said in a statement. The law will take effect in 2028. Environmental standards. House Bill 5070 bars the Illinois Pollution Control Board from adopting U.S. Environmental Protection Agency rules and regulations that are less stringent than existing state standards. The board is generally required to adopt federal environmental regulations through an expedited rulemaking process when federal standards change, but the new law would prevent that in some cases amid a significant rollback of federal environmental protection standards initiated by President Donald Trump's administration. This will ensure Illinois maintains its strong environmental protections that are legally supported and based on sound science, said Illinois EPA Director James Jennings. In-state tuition. More students could qualify for in-state tuition at Illinois colleges and universities under a new law. House Bill 5093 would loosen one of the requirements for paying in-state tuition by making it available to students who attended Illinois high schools for at least 3 years, even if they established residency outside the state before enrolling. Non-citizens would have to begin the process of becoming permanent U.S. residents to qualify. The change will take effect at the start of the 2027-28 school year. Hormone therapy. House Bill 5492 will require insurance providers to cover up to 6 months prescription for hormone therapy. The law, one of three signed by Governor J.B. Pritzker ahead of the Chicago Pride Parade, will allow patients, especially those receiving gender-affirming care, to access needed medications. It comes as several Republican-led states and the Trump administration are increasingly restricting access to gender-affirming care. Advocates say the longer supply will reduce interruptions in treatment. It takes effect on January 1st. Minor league baseball wages. Minor league baseball players are no longer subject to Illinois' minimum wage law under Senate Bill 454. The change only applies to players in the Peoria Chiefs, which is the only MILB team in Illinois as a high A affiliate for the St. Louis Cardinals. Representative Jay Hoffman, Democrat of Swansea, and Chiefs players are salaried and their wages are governed by a collective bargaining agreement. He said MLB and the Players Union supported the bill and the state law already exempts other minor league players from plays on unaffiliated teams. Swipe fees. Pritzker also signed Senate Bill 3645, a bill pushing back the effective date or end of several laws, including controversial bill to ban swipe fees that would have taken effect on July 1st. The Illinois law would have prohibited financial institutions from applying an interchange fee to the tax and tip portions of bill. Banks and retailers have estimated it would affect $120 million to $200 million in revenue or more each year to the benefit of retailers and chagrin of banks. Illinois will now be the only place where such a law was implemented. The law won't take effect until at least July 1, 2027, after being delayed for two straight years. It may never take effect after a federal judge issued a permanent injunction against it earlier in June. Climate risks. Under Senate Bill 4006, insurers generally must send out cancellation and non-renew notices 60 days in advance, double what was previously required. The law also requires insurance that offer fire and extended coverage that doesn't cover flood losses to explain that in plain language. They must also say whether the coverage offers flood coverage and how to obtain coverage through the National Flood Insurance Program. The insurer is required to obtain a signature from the insured, affirming that flood coverage options were presented and declined. The law also requires insurers to participate in the National Association of Insurance Commissioners Climate Risk Disclosure Survey. The next article, cocktails to go, new state agency among laws taking effect July 1st. 14 new laws will begin the new fiscal year by Ben Zielinski. July 1st marked a second New Year's Day in Illinois as a new budget takes effect along with more than a dozen new state laws. In addition to the state's nearly $56 billion fiscal year budget being implemented and the 1 cent motor tax increase being suspended for the remainder of the year, 14 new laws will go into effect on Wednesday. Cocktails to go. A pandemic era allowance is now law 6.5 years later. Senate Bill 618 makes cocktails to go permanent. Illinois lawmakers passed legislation during the pandemic that allowed restaurants and bars to sell cocktails and mixed drinks for pickup or delivery as businesses were closed in person to in-person customers. They'll be allowed to continue permanently under the new law. AI and bullying. Posting unauthorized artificial intelligence images can be considered cyberbullying in Illinois schools under House Bill 3851. This includes posting or distributing sexual images. Creating sexual images of children can also be charged under the state's child pornography laws under a law passed in 2025. Many people are using AI to produce harmful materials, which has led to a whole new level of cyberbullying, Senator Meg Laughlin Capel, Democrat of Shorewood, who sponsored the bill, said in a statement, "We cannot let our laws fall behind technology. This legislation helps our state meet current standards and ensures bullying by AI is addressed in the school code. Illinois lawmakers have broadly sought to regulate artificial intelligence, including its presence in schools." Department of Early Childhood. The new Department of Early Childhood will officially launch on July 1st, completing one of Governor J.B. Pritzker's top priorities of his second term. Senate Bill 1 to create the new agency passed the General Assembly with bipartisan support in 2024 and calls for consolidating a variety of early childhood services that are spread across multiple state agencies under one roof. Those include oversight and funding of preschools, child care centers, home visiting, and early intervention programs. Pritzker tapped Teresa Ramos to head the agency. She's worked in childcare advocacy before joining the government's offices of educational policy team. Lawmakers appropriated $2.1 billion from the government revenue fund to the new agency in fiscal year 2027, which begins July 1st. Contraband report. The Department of Corrections will have to report more information about contraband in its facilities as the department continues to face scrutiny about substance exposures. Senate Bill 2201 requires the department to annually report data about what contraband is found, where it was discovered, how it got into the facility, and any disciplinary action that was taken as a result. It also requires IDOC to report on medical responses and hospitalization for staff members, including the clause. And statewide public defender. The bricks of the new Office of State Public Defender can begin being laid on July 1st as House Bill 3362 requires an 11-member commission to be appointed by October 1st. The commission will identify the costs and funding sources to establish Office of State Public Defender. The remainder of the bill, including additional processes to set up the office, will take effect on January 1st. The next article, Illinois veterinarians encourage pet owners to stay informed about New World screwworm. As awareness of the New World screwworm grows following recent national attention, the Illinois State Veterinary Medical Association, the ISVMA, is encouraging pet owners and animal caretakers to stay informed while emphasizing that the parasite remains rare in the United States and that routine veterinary care remains the best defense against infestation. The association recently launched a statewide educational effort designed to provide accurate, science-based information about New World screwworm, including how animals become infected, what warning signs owners should watch for, and practical preventative measures that can help protect pets and livestock. New World screwworm is a parasitic fly whose larvae feed on the living tissue of warm-blooded animals. Unlike common maggots that feed on dead tissue, screwworm larvae can infest wounds or other openings in the skin. This parasite can affect pets, livestock, wildlife, and in rare cases, humans. Veterinary leaders said the recent attention surrounding New World screwworm has prompted understandable questions from Illinois pet owners, but they emphasize there is no reason for panic. Awareness and prevention are the most important messages for pet owners right now, said Dr. Kate Bruckner, president of the Illinois State Veterinary Medical Association. While New World screwworm has received increased attention nationally, it remains uncommon in the United States. Pet owners should not be alarmed, but they should be informed and take routine steps to protect their animals. According to ISVMA, pet owners should contact their veterinarian if they notice wounds that fail to heal, unusual odors coming from the wounds, visible maggots, persistent licking or biting at one location, or signs that an animal appears to be in pain or otherwise unwell. Veterinarians also recommend keeping pets on year-round flea and tick prevention, routinely checking animals for cuts, scrapes, or other skin injuries, providing proper wound care, and maintaining regular veterinary wellness visits. Surgical sites and other injuries should also be monitored closely to ensure they heal properly. Veterinary professionals caution against attempting to diagnose or treat suspected informations without professional assistance. If you see something concerning, don't try to treat it yourself, Bruckner said. Contact your veterinarian immediately. Veterinarians are trained to identify potential causes and are required to report suspected infestations so appropriate animal health officers can respond quickly to protect other animals. ISVMA also reminds Illinois residents traveling internationally with dogs to review current federal animal health requirements before returning to the United States. Dogs returning from Mexico must comply with current USDA and APHIS certification requirements related to the New World screwworm before reentering the country. The Association emphasized that New World screwworm does not affect food safety and that human infections remain uncommon. Rucker said that routine veterinary care includes to provide strong protection for Illinois pets. The good news is that basic preventative veterinary care, regular wound monitoring, and prompt attention to any health concerns go a long way towards keeping pets safe, she said. Illinois pet owners already do many of these things every day, and that's why I want to reassure them that simple, common sense precautions are highly effective. Veterinary officials encourage pet owners with questions or concerns to consult their veterinarian and rely on trusted animal care resources for accurate, up-to-date information as awareness efforts continue across Illinois. In the next article, new law brings farmland assessment changes by Hannah Spangler. Farmland values could level off and eventually decline under changes to the state's Farmland Assessment Act included in the budget package signed June 16th by Governor J.B. Pritzker. Public Act 104-0468 extends the vegetative filter strip assessment, adjusts the income capitalization rate, and makes other technical updates to the Farmland Association Act. Originally introduced and supported by Illinois Farm Bureau as SB 4202, sponsored by Senator Mark Walker, Democrat of Arlington Heights, and HB 5773, sponsored by Representative Larry Walsh Jr., Democrat of Joliet. The legislative provisions were passed by the General Assembly at the end of the spring legislative session in SB 3019. The changes reflect a collaborative effort by the Farmland Assessment Technical Advisory Board, the FATAB, which includes the College of Agriculture, Consumer and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois, and Chief County Assessment Officers Association and the Department of Revenue. We appreciate the Illinois General Assembly, the legislative sponsors, and the governor putting this into law to keep Farmland Assessment Act and the formula used to calculate the income earning potential of farmland technically correct and working as it was originally envisioned, said IFB Director of Local Government Programs, Brenda Matherly. Unlike the residential, commercial, or industrial property, Illinois farmland is assessed based on its income earning potential. Matherly explained that potential is calculated using a statewide formula that incorporates community prices, input costs, and capitalization rate, a factor that in the formula that converts a farm's income potential into an assessed value for tax purposes tied to long-term farm mortgage interest rates. This year, IFB set a state and local government priority to adjust how the formula impacts the taxable value of farmland. The changes included in this legislation did just that, Matherly told Farm Week. The new law places guardrails around the capitalization rate by requiring 3 percentage points to be added to the published rate. If the adjusted rate falls below 8%, it will default to 8%. If it exceeds 10%, it will be capped at 10%. The formula is a very complex calculation and is monitored and reviewed by FATAB and Illinois Department of Revenue, Matherly said. If this new application had been administered for the most recently released farmland assessments, the capitalization rate was applied would have been 8.8% instead of 5.8%, Matherly shared as an example. By adding 3 percentage points to the 5.8% that was used in the formula under the current application, the effective rate would have been 8.8, falling well within the new statutory rate required capitalization rate changes. Benefit to farmers and others? In recent years, historically low capitalization rates have pushed farmland assessed values higher. Matherly said had a higher value would level out values and in some cases even lower them. The act also expected to bring more consistency to year-to-year assessment changes, which could benefit both farmland owners and local taxing districts. Additionally, the legislation extends the classification and assessment of vegetative filter strips by moving the sunset date from December 31st this year to 2031. While this is good news for Illinois farmers, it's important to note that the change made in this law will not be immediately seen in the annual assessed value of farmland, Matherly said. The state is still working through a 2013 legislative change that requires assessed values to be moderated by a limited factor, preventing farmland values from changing too much in a single year. That factor has driven steady increases in farmland values and expected to continue influencing taxable values in the next year or two. However, Matherly said the newly applied capitalization rate will likely accelerate how quickly that limit is reached. This will allow values to revert to an assessment driven by data and used in the income capitalization formula and keeps the goal that its process accurately reflects the real economic drivers, she said. We have time for some briefs. The City of Arcole will continue its celebration of America's 250th anniversary with a community event on Tuesday, July 8th in downtown Arcola, honoring the nation's history and those who have served. The evening will begin at 4:50 p.m. with an unveiling of the new memorial in downtown Arcola. A public reading will follow at 5 p.m. commemorating the significance of the occasion. At 5:15, members of the VFW will present a traditional 21-gun salute to tribute the nation's veterans and fallen heroes. A celebration will conclude with light refreshments at Arcola City Hall beginning at 5:20 p.m. Community members are invited to attend this patriotic event as Arcola joins communities across the nation in commemorating the 250th anniversary of the United States. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.